Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. We're going to continue where we left off last week. As we did last week, I'd like to begin this week with a quick review of the major highlights from last week, and we're going to sort of conclude last week's discussion, and then at least for, I would say, hopefully the last 15 minutes or so, begin the next major topic in Bishul Shabbos. So last week we saw that we spoke about the Kelim, Kli Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, etc., and I just want to review the main points regarding what we may or may not do with any one of the kelim. So we spoke first about a kli rishon shel gabei ha'esh, which means, let's say, a pot that is on the fire, an urn that's plugged in. In this case, we said one may not add anything to the kli rishon shel gabei ha'esh. That's just a simple rule without any exceptions. So more or less easy to remember. Now, a kli rishon shel huzer min ha'esh, which means a pot, let's say, that has been removed from the fire, but may still be very hot. So if it is still yadzol edisbo, you may only add fully cooked solid foods. So one of the examples we gave is like adding, let's say, cooked noodles, let's say, to a pot of soup, or putting salt into a pot of soup once it's removed from the fire. This would be permissible. Iwoy mekli rishon was the next step, pouring directly from a kli rishon. So here we said, in halacha, we assume that it could be mevashel kedei klipa, which means it could cook the outer surface of whatever it is that it is being poured onto. And so therefore, there are certain situations where one could do Iroi from a Kli Rishon, but by and large, one would need to be concerned about pouring from a Kli Rishon, that there is still the potential of Bishul. Now, the next stage is what's called a Kli Sheni. Once the water has been, or whatever it is, the contents of the pot has been poured into the next vessel, so that's called a Kli Sheni. And here we said, a Kli Sheni, according to Halacha, cannot be Mevashel, except for a category known as Kaliya Bishul. We said, like described by the Bir Halacha, flaky, soft foods. And the problem is that we are not really sure what is and what is not considered to be Kaliya Bishul. So even though the rule that Kli Sheni Mevashel on the surface seems like a very major kula, in practical terms, it's not really as helpful as one would think. With the exception, of course, of those foods that are known specifically not to be among the Kaliya Bishul, I would say the most significant of all, we mentioned, is water. Water we know is not among the Kaliya Bishul, and so therefore there wouldn't be no problem, let's say, taking cold water and mixing it with hot water in a Kli Sheni, because according to the Gemara, Kli Sheni and Mevashel, and we know that water is not among the Kaliya Bishul. If you were not here last week, this may seem like, you know, we're going through a lot of material in a very short period of time, but of course, I'm assuming at this point that it is a review for everyone, and forgive me for going so quickly. Then we spoke about Iroi from a Kli Sheni, from pouring from this second vessel, and this has the same status of a Kli Shlishi. Great, what's the din of a Kli Shlishi? So you saw there's a machlokas between different poskim, but perhaps most famously the Mishnah Berurah and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Mishnah Berurah seems to indicate that a Kli Sheni and a Kli Shlishi has the same din as a Kli Sheni. So really, when you pour it to the next Kli, nothing really changes. Rav Moshe, however, assumed that a Kli Shlishi is not Mevashel at all, even Kaliya Bishul. And so therefore, according to Rav Moshe, it would be permissible to put anything inside of a Kli Shlishi. And of course, we spoke about the different methods of making tea, let's say, on Shabbos, if one is going to follow the more strict opinion of the Mishnah Berurah or the more lenient opinion of Rav Moshe. We also mentioned at the end of the shiur that there is a big discussion in halacha regarding the status of a ladle, a kaf in halacha. And the reason why there was a discussion over here is because typically a ladle, as an example, is submerged into a hot pot. And let's say we're talking about a kli rishon. So let's say you have a pot of soup and you take it off the fire and you submerge the ladle inside. So can we assume that the ladle, being sort of a secondary kli, is now a kli sheni, or no? Since I'm sticking it inside of the Kli Rishon, maybe it doesn't really have the lenient status of a Kli Sheni. So there were different opinions regarding this question. We said that that Halach L'maisa, a person could be lenient if they're careful not to leave the ladle inside. So when a person is ladling soup, when they're done, you know, let's say you could stick it in and out as many times as you want, but when you're done, you should leave it on the side, on the counter, let's say, in the sink, whatever the case may be, but not leave it inside of the pot. Okay, tonight we're going. That was sort of a review of last week. Now we're going to begin the next topic on the discussion on the agenda, and this is what's called in halacha davar gush. Now, gush means something which is a solid, a block of sorts. So what is the concept of a Davar Goshen halacha? So according to some opinions, this is based on the opinion of the Marshal, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Marshal is actually, this opinion is actually found in Yerodeah. I mentioned, I believe last week, that when we talk about some of these halachos, as they apply to Bishul and Shabbos, there's cross discussions at time between Yerodeah and Hilchos Shabbos. So according to some opinions, a solid which has been removed from a Kli Rishon retains the status of a Kli Rishon. What does that mean? Until now, when we're talking about Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, we generally speak about transferring liquid contents from one keli to another. So we were speaking about pouring water or dispensing water from an urn, let's say. That generally speaking, when we speak about Kli Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, we're talking about liquids. What happens if a person takes, let's say, a hot potato, let's say, out of an oven, or takes a piece of chicken out of a pan and transfers it to another vessel, let's say, to a plate. So what do we say? Do we say that, well, I've transferred it, so now it's a klisheni? What is a klisheni? You mean like the food? We're going to explain what we mean in a moment, has sort of the status of a klisheni, or no? So the Marshal says, not so simple. Why? So this is based on the position of Tosos that we've seen already, I believe, 2 weeks in a row, that a klisheni is damavasha because of the svaro of defanos makaros, right? The Tosos explain that when I transfer liquid contents from one vessel to another, the walls of the second vessel, sort of, they're not hot, and so they serve to sort of cool down the contents, and so therefore this is not considered to be a normal, effective manner of bishul. However, because of the density and the form of solids, what we're calling over here dvar gush, so the heat is not displaced throughout the walls of the kli, and therefore the logic of kli sheni mevashel doesn't really apply here. And so therefore the Maharshal basically has this chumrah that when you transfer a solid food that is hot from its original place where it was cooking or baking, so it doesn't necessarily automatically, it's not downgraded to the next level of kli sheni. Why does this matter? So based on this chumrah, watch the following. Because it is to be strict, unless there are other mitigating factors. We'll discuss what they may be in a minute. So therefore, one should not, say, sprinkle uncooked spices or vegetables on top of a davar gush. So that would mean, let's say, if you're looking at a baked potato that is hot, even after I transfer it from one plate to another, as long as it's hot, it's still gonna have the din of a kli rishon. Now, of course, it's not a kli. So we're speaking over here only in conceptual terms, but just like a water or soup, let's say, inside of a kli rishon can cook, so too a hot potato also has the power, the heat, in order to cook. And so therefore, I wouldn't want to put something which is uncooked on top of or next to touching a hot solid. What would some mitigating factors be? So first of all, this is not even a mitigating factor. This would obviously not apply to something that was previously cooked, such as ketchup, which is perhaps a very practical example. There are people who like putting ketchup on lots of different hot foods. There wouldn't be a problem because ketchup was previously cooked. So therefore, there is no problem over here. Now, it would also not apply when the davar gush was cooked or was subsequently immersed in liquids. So if you're talking about, let's say, soupy chalent or meatballs and sauce, chickens and vegetables and soup, in all these cases, even though it's true there are solid units within the food, a chalent, meatballs and chickens or vegetable in the soup, but since it has been cooked and it is right now immersed in liquids, so the assumption once again is that whatever happens when you transfer, you know, again, liquids from one keli to another, it's also going to happen here as well. And so therefore you have sort of the benefit, the kula of a kli sheni. And finally, this would not apply when this davar gush has been cut into pieces. So let's say if you take a solid piece of chicken and you cut it into small pieces, so you don't have to be concerned about, let's say, touching lettuce. If you're making, let's say, salad with chicken, because once you cut it up, so obviously it's going to start to cool very quickly. Question. Sure.
So what, you could cut the chicken and then put the parsley on it?
Uh-huh. Right.
You just can't put it on whole.
Exactly.
Does it matter where you cut it? Like, if you cut it on another plate, does that plate now?
No, the plate itself. No, you can. You don't have to take it, transfer it to another plate. If you cut it up into pieces.
If you were to transfer it to that other plate, does that other plate have the same status as your chicken?
No.
Like a klisheni.
No, the plate itself doesn't become a klisheni.
It's just the food.
It's just the food.
So once you cut it, you can do whatever you want
Yeah. Exactly. If you take the chicken and you cut it into pieces, then it's no. Then we no longer apply this. Okay. No, that's not going to help you. The idea is that you
accept, you have to cook it again. Right. You have to cut it again.
Right. Right. The idea is whatever the unit is, it doesn't really matter how right. small it. I mean, there may be.
Let's close down.
Right. That correct. Exactly. Okay. So now we're just gonna. Remember, I don't know if you remember, last week I was hoping to actually get all the way through here by the end of this year. So some of the practical takeaways that we're going to do right now is going to be a good chazar for last week. So I'm just trying to, you know, come up with some other examples, just sort of summarizing everything that we've learned until now before we go on to the next topics. So some of this may relate to tonight and some of this may bring us back to last week. One may pour ketchup, mustard, or mayonnaise over any hot food served on a plate. One may put pasteurized butter or margarine on a hot potato. So I guess that normally, but margarine is considered to be cooked because it goes through this pasteurization process. So you would be permitted to put it on a hot potato for that reason. One may add soup croutons, which are generally, I don't know if they all are, but generally deep fried to a bowl of hot soup. Now remember, if the soup is in what we would consider to be a kli shlishi, and you're following the lenient position of Rabbi Moshe that a kli shlishi is not mevashel, so then you could put. For sure you could put anything in there. But if they were cooked previously, then even perhaps in a cliche. One should be careful, however, not to dip cake or a cookie in tea if it is in a cliche. Why would tea be in a cliche? So we discussed last week that very often people make tea using tea essence in a cliche, so you shouldn't assume that tea is automatically in a cliche. Really depends on how you make your tea. One may place an ice cube or cold water, there's a bit of a typo there, into a cup of hot tea or a bowl of soup. Even though, I may mention this previous year, even though clearly it's going to cause the ice cube to melt, which you would have thought maybe be another problem, but it's actually not a problem.
Does it matter what kli it's
in? Yeah, it would have to be at least a klisheni. But again, a bowl of soup is always going to be at least a klisheni. I can't imagine a bowl of soup being a kli rishon. One may eat hot cholent, whether it is soupy or lumpy, together with cold cuts or other pieces of cooked cold meat. Why can you do this? After all, based on Marshal, so we said that this is concept of Davagrish. So first of all, we mentioned already that a cholent, given the fact that it is often very liquidy, so we wouldn't apply the Chumah of the Marshal anyhow. In addition, the cold meat over here was cooked beforehand. So this is a typical situation that probably comes up when people mix their cholent with other things on the bowl. However, you should not place, let's say, a pickle or any other uncooked food item on top of or underneath a hot davagush. Okay. One just page about warming baby bottles. There are different ways that you could warm a baby bottle. One way is to pour directly on the bottle from an urn or kettle. So remember, we mentioned that pouring from a kli rishon could be mevashel kedei klipa. So if you would want to just pour hot water on top of the outside of the bottle, that would be permissible. You could also pour water directly from the urn or the kettle into the bottle. It's not a problem when you're pouring it into liquids, as long as the water is not being raised to the outside of the bowl. I would hope that you would not want to raise the bottle to that temperature, because that would be very hot, and probably dangerous. But it is fairly, you know, I think it's common where people want to warm up the bottle a little bit, so it would be permissible to do so. You could even take the bottle and stick it right under the urn, although you would want to maybe be concerned about, you know, that it shouldn't splash up, and you wouldn't want to contaminate the urn that way with any splashing milk. You could place the entire bottle into a klisheni, and that would be permissible. Total immersion in hot water could be a problem of hatmana. We haven't discussed that yet. That'll be probably the last year we'll talk about hatmana. So without going into the details right now, you wouldn't want to take a bottle and submerge it entirely into the water. So you want to leave at least something sticking out. Okay, the next topic is called an halacha hagasa. Hagasa means stirring. One may not stir food that has not been fully cooked. This constitutes an issur d'oraisa of kiruv bishul. Kiruv bishul means to, you know, to literally to make to accelerate the bishul process. So you're making it go a little quicker. Maybe a bit of a chiddush. Maybe you would think that bishul is only in a situation where you do the entire act of bishul. Over here, it's going to cook anyway, even if you do nothing. But the fact that I do an act which accelerates the process, this is actually considered to be potentially nisa d'oraisa. So therefore, you would not want to stir a pot that was, let's say, on the fire if it was not fully cooked. That's for sure. Now, the Beis Yosef quotes the opinion of the Kolbo, a Rishon, that says that this applies even when the food is fully cooked. Now, that's a chiddush, because the food is fully cooked already, so you cannot say it's kiruv bishul. So what's the problem? What's the problem? So the Mishmaru asked this question, and the Shari Siyun, he says he doesn't understand the Shita, and there are basically two explanations that are brought down in the Achronim. The first opinion, which was cited in the name of the Rav, this is found in the Masorah Journal, he points out, based on the Rambam compares the act of Hagasa to wringing out clothing. When a person, let's say, washes clothing and wrings it out. The way the Rav explained it, that according to the Rambam, stirring food is part of the cooking process. It's considered to be an act of bishul, even if the food is already cooked. Again, it doesn't mean that the Rav necessarily held that this was in fact usur, but how could we understand, just how could we understand conceptually this opinion of the Kolbo cited by the Beis Yosef? So if I'm going like this and the food is on the fire, that's considered cooking. That's called cooking, even though technically speaking, everything is fully cooked. The other explanation is, this is maybe more of a practical one, that sometimes you think everything is fully cooked, but you never know, there may be some potato that's lost there somewhere in the bottom, buried under a bunch of, I don't know, something, and it was not fully cooked beforehand, and by stirring it, so then you may actually cook it. And so therefore, based on this, we have the schumer that you should not be magus, you should not stir a pot while it is still on the fire, even if you think it was cooked beforehand. Now, again, this is a chumra. Now, the Ramah forbids removing food from a pot which is on the fire for the similar reason. If I have food that's cooking on the fire, let's say a great example of this would be cholent. Sometimes people like picking from the cholent on Friday night. So maybe you can make a case that skimming off the top, again, assuming that you check with whoever prepared the cholent in the house, they may not appreciate it. But maybe you can make a case that that would be all right. But to dig in the cholent while it is on the fire in the crock pot, so that would be a problem. And it may actually be a real serious problem, because you can't necessarily assume that everybody's cholent is really cooked Friday night. We're not going to talk about right now what it means to be cooked for the purpose of discussion, but it's in almost all cases, it's what's called mitzdamik v'yafalo, meaning if it's going to cook a little longer, it's going to get better. So it could be a serious shaila to go ahead and to actually remove something which is not right on the top of a pot while it's still on the fire.
Do you have to basically take it off, hold on to it, mix it, and put it back on?
Well, I'm not even sure that would be, that would only be permissible if it is cooked. If it's not cooked, you cannot take the cholent even off the fire and start stirring it. Because remember, you may still be doing an act of bishul, just given the fact that it's a kli rishon. Right? Remember when we spoke about, you know, the leniencies that apply to kli rishon, it's only when you're putting something in, let's say that was fully cooked. Over here, if the contents are not fully cooked, you should be stirring it. While this is very impractical, some are lenient. If one wants to remove cholent from a pot, you should first remove from the fire and maintaining the conditions of achzara, which we're not going to get to tonight, but there may be other conditions that need to be met in order to effectively remove cholent from a pot and then return it. You know, we're going to leave that line out as well right now, because we haven't discussed the zones of the blech. The prohibition of stirring does not apply to clear liquids. This would only apply to solids or dense semi-solids. So cholent, of course, is the great example. If you talk about clear chicken soup, let's say, which has a natural, even distribution of heat without stirring, so stirring doesn't really accelerate the process. We may do it to make ourselves feel better, but it doesn't really do anything. So that would not be considered to be a problem of Hagasa. All things being equal, it's probably best to avoid a vey. Not stirring, you can stare at your food all you want, but stirring anything directly in the fire to avoid confusion. I did very well in spelling in school. I don't know, I guess it's something about PowerPoints. There are different opinions regarding covering a pot on the fire. Certainly may be lenient if the food is fully cooked. It's very interesting. Covering a pot. Now this is a chumra al gabei chumra in a sense, right? Remember the concept of there being an isser to stir a pot. To stir the contents of a pot is a chumra, assuming that the food is fully cooked. Covering a pot is is certainly, you would think, to be, it would be less of a problem. But there are different opinions over here. And there were those who were machmir. There seemed to be a stira in the teachings of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Netshuva writes that this is prohibited. But if you look in some of the svarim that have been published on this topic, so some of them quote Mikula, at least in the name of Rav Moshe, that it was permissible. I've heard from Poskim that this is permissible to go ahead and to place a pot directly on top of the cover on a pot that's on the fire. That is permissible. Okay. We'll talk about a couple of other non-food related, but to very much bishul related problems. Wet clothing and materials. One should not place wet clothes, such as coats or gloves or rubbers, hats, on and near a radiator or any heat source, which is Yad Soledisbo. Maybe you would think to do this just because it's just a good place to drop it. I have no intention of cooking or heating up the clothing, and certainly not the water, the moisture that's contained within, but this could be potentially be a shaila bishul. To be clear, you're not cooking the clothing, but since they're very wet, you could be cooking the water. And similarly, one should not dry their hands on a towel, which is covering an urn. One should not use a damp pot holder to hold a pot. Now, it would have to be very damp for this to be a problem, but these are things you want to be mindful of just when you're thinking about, you know, other bishul-related problems in the kitchen. Another interesting topic of discussion, we're going through these very quickly. Many urns today have these water level indicators. And when the urn is filled initially, so the water obviously will fill that tube over there, which will, you know, help a person know how much water is left in the urn. But the tube itself doesn't get that hot. And so therefore, when the contents of the urn are emptied, so some of that water from the valve will actually go into the urn. So it's interesting, Shaila, as to whether or not it's a problem to use such an urn. So even if we're going to come to the conclusion it's not a problem, it's an interesting. Some have raised a concern regarding these urns because it has never been cooked. It is brought down in the Sefer Shmir Shabbos, Kilchosa, the Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zuchan al-Varach, was lenient for several reasons. Number one, the water may have been cooked already. This is what's called the Psikresha de lo Nichale, right, which means, we discussed this last week, that even though what's happening is certain, it is not my intention to do so. I'm only pushing this button because I want to get the water out of the urn, but not because I'm looking to cook that which is in the indicator valve. And I don't care if it does. It's not really going to make a big difference to me whether it's cooked or not. Furthermore, you could argue maybe that this was called a grumma. Big discussion as to how we would define grumma and halacha, but certainly my actions over here, as far as the water from the valve going into the main section of the urn, so this is somewhat indirect, so therefore you could make a case that it's a grumma as well. There are people who try to fix their urns, I'm not sure exactly how they try to do that, but there are people who try to kasha their urns by circumventing this problem. Hot water vaporizers. You may not add cold water to a hot water vaporizer. Doing so could be a problem of bishul d'oraisa, obviously, because you know the water in the vaporizer is going to be vaporized. It's going to be cooked. According to many, you can take hot water, you can add hot water rather to a vaporizer if it is currently operating, and the water came directly from a kli rishon. This is what's called, the Gemara calls this pina mimecham lemecham, which means transferring water from one, let's say, kettle to another. And we may talk about other applications of this later, but this would perhaps be permissible.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So if you see your soup is running low, it's getting boiled up, you can't take from the hot urn and put it straight into the pot.
Well, you probably could. That would be an example of pina mechon mechon, but you couldn't do it while it's still on the fire. So you would have to remove it from the fire.
Put it into another kli to take it from the urn to put it into a cup and then put it back into the soup pot.
Perhaps you could. Even though it's not a real kli rishon, it could be very difficult, sometimes impossible, to take water from a kli rishon and transfer. So even though the classic pina mechon mechon was just that, it would be permissible, perhaps, to go ahead and to, let's say, take a cup, put it by the urn, take some hot water out of the urn, and add it to the chalent, but you may have to remove the chalent. We're going to have to hold off on the real discussions of that until we talk about Achazara. Cold water vaporizers may be used. and are not considered to be a problem of Zoreh. What is Zoreh? That's one of the Avos Melachos. Not to be confused with Zoreya, with an ayin. Zoreh is called winnowing, I think, right? Zoreh in the Mishnah is when they would, it's part of, the three Melachos that are very similar. Zoreh, Boreh, and Merakeid. So Zoreh, they would take the wheat kernels and throw them up in the air, and the wind would separate, you know, the seeds would fall because they were heavy, and if there was a nice wind, it would blow the straw, the chaff, to the side. So it's like a separation process. So, you know, poskim discuss, let's say, using aerosol cans, let's say, whether that's a problem of Zoreh, and we assume it's not. So you would think maybe that adding cold water to a vaporizer seems like Zoreh because it seems almost like it's distributing this, spraying this mist into the air. But it's not. In fact, I mean, could be some say it is, but we would assume that adding cold water to a vaporizer, it's not a vaporizer. They're called cold water vaporizers, but not really vaporizers, I don't think. That would not be a problem on Shabbos.
I know you just said it quickly, but so you can use
an
aerosol?
Oh, an aerosol you can use. Yes, you may use. Oh. You may. Yes. Finally, I believe the last topic in tonight, well, not for tonight's shiur entirely, but just for this segment of our discussion is about tap water. One may not turn on hot tap water on Shabbos, even if one turns off the heater, which I don't really know if it's smart to do that and if there's a way to really do that. I know there are people who say that they do it, but I don't
turn
know.
Off the boiler.
That's what I mean. Yeah, turn off the boiler. I don't know that people are doing it. I don't even know if they're really doing it anyway. Anyway, regardless, even if you turn it off, it's going to be a problem because the way the hot water usually works is that if you turn on the hot water in your house, so there's cold water that automatically feeds into the tank. So even if right, no, but I'm saying, but sometimes, let's say somebody's saying, I'm going to turn off my heater. So it's not going to be heating up water anymore. But still, because of the fact that it's a big tank filled with hot water and it's insulated, you know, it may still be a kli rishon. Let's say it's a kli rishon shel agabei esh, let's say. So for a little cold water to go in, it's going to get cooked right away. So that would still be a problem.
If you still use the hot water, though, itself, forget adding any, just using the hot water in the boiler.
Well, how would you do that?
You open up the tap water. It's hot. You just put it into the cup.
No, but I'm saying, but when you do that, then cold water goes into the heater.
It will
automatically
feed it right away. It won't cook it, but it will automatically feed it because right. It's so hot.
It could be it varies from house to house. I know that recently, very recently actually, my hot water heater broke. It had a 6-year warranty. It broke like 6 years in just like a couple of days. It was a couple of weeks. That's all it was. So I know because, you know, I saw that it was starting to leak. So I didn't know exactly what it meant, but I knew enough to. So I turned off the feed into the heater, just knowing that if it was going to completely rupture, which it didn't, at least it would only be, what it was, 50 or 75 gallons in the basement and not hundreds and hundreds. But then I discovered right away that the hot water didn't work anywhere in the house. If you turned it on, it didn't work. So my understanding, therefore, was that's the way it works. If you turn off the feed, then you can't use your hot water. But people say that they turn off the tank. I don't know exactly what that means and how they do that. But even if they do, I would not assume that that works. Using hot water tap on Shabbos would normally be a problem. Some are lenient in an apartment building, the rationale being that there are probably at any given point other people who are using the hot water anyway, so therefore you're not really doing an act of vishul, not so simple. One may take water from a kettle or urn and place it in a large basin in order to wash dishes, we mentioned that earlier. And in situations of a chole, which would include a baby, is considered below the age of 3 is considered to be in halacha have the status of a chola, even if the baby is perfectly healthy. So it's worth it to ask a shayla because there would perhaps be more room to be lenient regarding the use of hot tap water than actually cooking something, let's say putting a kettle on the fire. But in normal situations, one should not actually go ahead and use hot tap water on Shabbos. There are those who have a chumer not to use the faucets in the house that have one control, one lever, one whatever you call it. Right, because it sort of makes it only an F2. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know, you have to start changing the fixtures in your house, whatever it's worth. And on our house, I think almost all of them, maybe even all of them actually, have one lever, and you just want to, you know, remind yourself to be in the habit to only use cold water. What was that? I'm sorry.
Delta force.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Good. All right. So now we're going to begin the next topic. The next topic. When I say we've done a lot of topics tonight, but next topic really, next major topic, because until now we're about 2.5, almost 3 shiurim into the discussion. We've been talking about sort of bishul on a Torah level, meaning what constitutes bishul and some of the situations that we should be mindful of on Shabbos. But as we pointed out from the first moment we began this discussion, that there may be situations in which something is technically permissible from a perspective that, well, I'm not really going, this is not considered to be an act of cooking, but may still be prohibited on Shabbos for other reasons. So we're going to begin that discussion tonight. We're not going to be able to get too far into the discussion, but we'll begin and maybe start with some of the major makoros tonight and talk about some practical applications next week. There is a Mishnah Masechet Shabbos, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, which says the following. The Mishnah actually gives a bunch of examples, I think 4 or 5. I'm just going to give 2, but they all seem very similar in nature. B'shama yomim in shorin diyo v'samonim kashinin elekadesh yashurim bod yom v'silim atirin. The case that's described over here in the Mishnah is that according to B'shama, you may not go ahead and take, let's say, some vegetable, something that grows, which is usually placed in water and dyes that water. So one of the ways that they would produce dye or ink is by taking certain natural products, which when they were soaked in water, would bleach the water or color the water, dye the water. So Beis Shammai says you cannot do this on Erev Shabbos unless the dyeing process will basically complete Mibod Yom before Shabbos begins. Now, we're not talking about doing anything on Shabbos. It's all Erev Shabbos, but Beis Shammai says you cannot do it. Beis Hillel Matirim. The Beis Hillel makes more sense to us. Beis Hillel makes perfect sense to us because you're not doing anything on Shabbos. But according to Beis Shammai, no, you can't. Another example that's found in the Mishnah, Beis Shammai says, in Porsim Mitzudos Chai V'Ofas V'Dagim, Elekadesh Yitzudim Mibod Yom. You should not set traps on Erev Shabbos to catch, let's say, animals, birds, fish, whatever the case may be, unless they're being placed for the purpose and they're being placed with enough time to actually serve their purpose on the Erev Shabbos. But to do right before Shabbos with the intention of catching these animals on Shabbos is prohibited according to Beis Shammai, but once again, Beis Hillel Matirin. Now, we know that we follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, so you may be able to think in your mind about other cases where we do things on Erev Shabbos right before Shabbos, which continue into the day, such as putting on the washing machine.
Dishwasher.
The dishwasher.
I wouldn't think dishwasher.
Putting in hot water.
The last bit, I
would
think.
What? Right. It could be that, I don't know now's the time to break the news to you, but it could be that it would be prohibited. It actually comes from this sugya to put certain appliances on that are going to make noise on Shabbos. There may be a problem to do that. So you want to just be mindful of that. Not the discussion for now, but washers and dryers and dishwashers and stuff like that. It could be for that reason alone you'd want to make sure that they were not operating it on Shabbos, even put it beforehand. But what did you say? What was your example?
Said using a hot water urn, putting the water right before Shabbos.
Okay, very good. Even though, correct. And that's actually going to bring us into discussion. Over there, the water is not cooked beforehand, but okay, that's good enough for now. Putting on the water in the urn before Shabbos. Or turning on, let's say, most people put on their sprinklers during the day, not at night, but putting on, let's say, if you have sprinklers on a timer, let's say. It's actually one of the examples that the Mishnah gives, not an automatic sprinkler system, but essentially a similar, primitive irrigation system. So putting it on beforehand, Beis Shammai would say it'd be a problem, Beis Hillel would say it's mutter. So the Baal Tanur over there explains what's going on over here. Sabi Beis Shammai, Odom Muzar al Shvisas Kalim, Kamo al Shvisas Behemta. The Torah says, right, we say on Shabbos, most people say this is part of Kiddush and Shabbos Day. Shem b'nei Yisrael ha-Shabbos, la-Sos ha-Shabbos, der Zom b'Solam. I'm sorry, Zohar Yom ha-Shabbos ha-Kadsho. Sheish Yisrael ha-Tavod b'Osis kam lachtecha, v'yom ha-Shi Shabbos la-Hashem ha-Lokecha, lo-Sase kam lachtecha, hu, ato, v'incha v'techa, avdecha v'matzwa, hemtecha v'gercha ha-Shabbos ha-Recha. There's one word in there which is very strange. V'hemtecha. Your animals shouldn't do malacha on Shabbos. Why? Your animals, the mitzvah mitzvos? Since when do animals have mitzvos? I don't know if you ever thought about that. That's a very strange word. Why is it that the Torah says your animals can't do malacha on Shabbos? Right, so there's an idea that just like you can't do malacha, you can't have your animals do malacha for you. That's called Shvisas Behema. So Beis Shammai is of the opinion that not only is it prohibited for a person to have their animals work on their behalf, but even to have your kalim, so to speak, work on your behalf. Now, obviously, kalim don't act on their own. They can't act voluntarily like animals can, but still there are, in theory, I could set certain things in motion beforehand. But Shammai says that no, I'm not permitted to do so because there's a concept of Shvisas Kalim. Beisila Matirin. Beisila said no, that as long as I put, let's say, the water in beforehand, we're going to see this example in a moment. Oh no, this was this example. Even though it's going to continue to dye the liquids on Shabbos, the Savi Ashvisas Behema Adamusar of Allah Shvisas Kalim, Beisila said that it's only a problem to work with your animals on Shabbos, but not your Kalim. So that's what's going on over here. So why is all this background necessary? Well, it's helpful because take a look at the following. Masach Shabbos Daf Yuches Mabez, it says, Lo Yamali Nachtom Chavis Shamayim V'niach L'to Chatanu Erev Shabbos V'chashecha. That a person, a Nachtom is like a baker, should not fill a barrel of water and place it in a tanur. Tanur is an oven. The truth of the matter is, it's not really all that different than the ovens that we have today, but Zman HaGemara, an oven, a tanur looked maybe something like this, where you basically had probably a clay oven. Today you see these like pizza ovens like this, where you would have wood or coals or something burning on the inside, and that's what we mean when we say a tanur. So the Gemara says over here that you cannot go ahead and take a water, let's say, and put it in there on Erev Shabbos, Simcha Shecha, as it's getting dark towards the end of the day. And if you did, you're not permitted to drink, let's say, this water, or to benefit from that which was cooked, until Motzei Shabbos, and even then you have to wait the amount of time that it would take to cook it. Sort of a knas. You know, you can't benefit right after Shabbos, because you sort of jumped the gun and did something on Erev Shabbos that you weren't supposed to do. Now, why not? What's the problem over here? So it sounds like, this sounds like what? The Beis Shammai, right? It sounds like Beis Shammai says, the Gemara, Leimer Beis Shammai hi, v'lo Beis Hillel. It sounds like this is only according to Beis Shammai, because Beis Shammai is the one who says that you can't do things on Erev Shabbos and set them into motion. According to Beis Hillel, this should be completely permissible, because I'm not doing anything on Shabbos at all. I did everything beforehand. And comes along, the Gemara says, no. And this is very relevant. Afilu Teima Beis Hillel. Even Beis Hillel would say that this is a problem. In other words, listen up, because this is a problem for us. Gezeira shem yechate b'kacholim. This is a different type of case. This is not like the cases we saw in the Mishnah. Over here, Beis Hillel was concerned that you would what? You would stick your hands in the oven and be mechate b'kacholim, which means you would stoke the coals. Why would you do that? You'd probably because you want to heat up the flames a little bit. If you see the embers were starting to, you know, to die down a little bit. So to be mechate b'kacholim. So you're gonna, you know, and therefore what? So what's the issur of being mechatim b'chalim? So there are two issurim there. There's bishul, what we're talking about over here, potentially with the water, and also that's an issur of havara. It's one of the avos malachos is lighting a fire and being mechatim b'chalim. If the coals are starting to die down and I stoke them, think about like a charcoal grill. You knock them around a little bit and the flames come out. That could be an issur deraisa of mavir of havara. And so Beis Hillel was very concerned that if you're going to put things in the oven when they're not cooked on Erev Shabbos, it may lead to being mechate b'kecholim. Now today, we don't really think in terms of chitoy kecholim because we don't work with ovens like this, but I guess the modern day equivalent would be, you know, adjusting the temperature perhaps. We'll see. It says the Gemara, v'hashadah mamar, gezeirah shemechate b'kecholim. Then the Gemara says, based on this, a very interesting kula, which we're going to come to in practical discussions a little later. And then he says, now that you're going to say the problem over here is gezeirah shemechate b'chalim, hay kedei rechaisa, which means a dish or a, you know, food that has been prepared that is completely raw. Probably the best example of this, it may actually only be a raw piece of meat. Why? Especially without a raw piece of meat, it takes a very long time to cook. Says the Gemara, shari la'anucha erev shabbos m'chashecha b'tanura. You can actually place that in the oven right before Shabbos, my time of why. Says the Gemara, since it's not going to be ready until tomorrow anyway, I'm not going to stand there stoking the coals because it's going to have to burn, it's going to have to cook all night. Our ovens today, if you stick anything there in all night, probably burn the next morning, right? Unless there are certain recipes, I think, that food cooks all night in a very low temperature. But generally, we don't have that. But we do have today crockpots. Crockpots, they're called slow cookers. That's they're called that for because they're supposed to cook slowly. So this very interesting application of this we're going to come to later when it comes to putting on, let's say, rochelin right before Shabbos. Okay, well, I'm going to just go to a couple more sources, and then we'll summarize, and I'll give you a little, sort of a little heads up in terms of how we're going to begin next week. Finally, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, a Mishnah, Kira. What is the difference between a Tana and a Kira? So this is a Kira. That's the best I could find, because these you don't really find so much today. This is another type of ancient cooking appliance, but it's more like a stove. Again, today we have gas stoves, typically electric stove top. It's a little different. But over here you have sort of a box where the coals, let's say, the wood would be inside, and the pot would either be on top or sometimes suspended over the Kira. You would, depending on how much you wanted to regulate the temperature. And this is what is referred to in the Mishnah as a Kira. So it says in the Mishnah that a Kira, again, we'll call like today a sort of a stove, shisikua bakash ubegavava. There are different ways that you could heat the inside of a Kira. One way they would do it is using, let's say, straw. Another way they would do it is using a gefes or eitzim, let's say wood. So what's the main difference between straw and wood when you burn it? Straw burns very quickly. Wood could burn much longer. So says the Mishnah, if you heat up this stove, this oven, using, let's say, straw, so nozim ala tavshil, you could put food on it right before Shabbos. It's not a problem. Why? Because we're not worried. Why? Because by the time it's nothing to be machate. It's just going to burn very quickly anyway. It's not going to get that hot. You're not going to accomplish anything. However, when it comes to, let's say, if you heat up with eitzim, lo yitein ach yigrof, or ach yitein as eifer. Now, it's a problem. You're not permitted to go ahead and put the food on there, even on Erev Shabbos, ach yigrof, or ach yitein as eifer. Which means until you either remove the coals that are inside, even though the kira may still be very hot, or at least until you cover the coals with eifer, with ash. This would be the equivalent today of sort of turning off the oven, or at least covering the flames. Because remember, again, using the more primitive, ancient cooking appliances, you wouldn't have like a convenient knob that you would turn on or off, higher or lower, just to regulate the temperature. You would do it by stoking the coals, by removing the coals, by covering the coals. And every one of those actions could potentially constitute one, maybe multiple Isura Deraisa. So there was great concern about putting uncooked foods on the fire beforehand. The word that we haven't actually seen yet, but is really what this entire topic about, is what's called in Halacha Shihiya, which means literally to leaving food on the fire from Erev Shabbos. So I hope this background was helpful because it set the table, so to speak, for the discussion. Really, when it comes, generally speaking, to virtually all malachos, there's no problem setting things in motion beforehand. The best example that I could think of is we light candles right before Shabbos. You light a candle and you walk away and it continues to burn. We turn the lights on. You know, there are many things that we set up right beforehand.
Timers.
What? Timers is a very interesting question about timers, but correct. Lechora, a timer would be a problem according to Beis Shammai. According to Beis Hillel, the whole basis for permitting to use the timer on Shabbos, even though there was great debate about that when timers first were being used, but also based on this concept of Beis Hillel. But the problem of Shihia, as far as putting uncooked foods on the fire on Erev Shabbos, so there's a concern about the fact that I may be tempted and I may forget, and it will lead to violating other things on Shabbos. So we're gonna stop here. Next week we're gonna talk about so basically according to the Mishnah over here, there are ways that it is permissible to do what's called Shihia. Like we said, covering the coals, removing the coals. So we're gonna talk about how we apply that, and of course, as I'm sure everybody knows, you know, the blech is going to be part of that discussion, how the blech is used, when you need a blech, what happens if you forgot to put on a blech. So we'll talk about that next week as we continue through this discussion. Okay, thank you very much. Have a wonderful night.